All right, thank you. Thank you, Theo, for all the organization. I want to thank my employer, Instacart, for sending me here, and thank you, everybody here, for coming to this talk. Quick survey, how many people have written some code in Raku before? Oh, good. How many people use it kind of regularly? Okay. How many people write Bash scripts? Okay, excellent. Okay. So my name is Brian Duggan. I'm a logistics engineer at Instacart. We do grocery delivery. We like to say basically everything is a race condition for us. I'm also a Raku module author, and I like to write scripts in Raku. So this is a brief outline of the talk. First, some motivation. What am I talking about? I'm going to go over concurrency in Raku, just a basic overview, and then I'll show you some tricks for migrating some stuff from Bash to Raku, how things look in Bash and how the same thing would look in Raku, and then how using some of the concurrency primitives can help your problem-solving abilities. Okay. So a few words about scripting. I tried to enumerate some of the characteristics of what we call scripting. So I'm really talking about shell scripting. And I think when I'm writing a shell script, it's usually something to solve. I'm going to do something pretty quickly. I don't want very many dependencies. It should be easy to understand. And it should be pretty reliable because has anybody had the experience of writing a script and it lasts for several years when you thought it was going to last for a few minutes? Okay, yes, good. All right, we are together. Okay, so another thing that I've noticed a lot about shell scripts is they're supposed to be pretty simple. You basically run some commands. Maybe you check their exit status. Maybe you have a little bit of control flow in your scripts. If you're fancy, you might write a PID file and use the file system to do atomic write and rename, so you get some guarantees that you don't have two of the same copy of your script running at the same time. For the most part, they look like this, though, right? They're basically standard procedural flow. You have some decisions. You go forwards. You don't usually see. You might, if you're really fancy, you might use trap to capture some signals. You might try to time out some commands. Has anybody used timeout, by the way? I just learned about it recently. Okay. You might have some progress indicators. You don't usually see things like async await or event loops or message queues or definitely not threads, definitely not mutexes or shared memory or anything like that. With scripts, we sort of assume that we don't really need real programming. We're just doing something simple. We want to get it done. And there's this idea that the world is just not that complicated. But I think in reality, the world actually is that complicated. So this is sort of how I vision our scripts are sort of on the right, where we have this vision of this perfect, linear world where things are well organized, running one after another. But in reality, the world is kind of a mess. As a wise man once said earlier today, minimizing concurrent code leads to crappy programs. Okay, so let's talk about Raku. Okay, so for a deeper dive about the implementation of concurrency in Raku, I recommend that you watch Jonathan Worthington's talk many years ago about parallelism, asynchrony, and concurrency in Raku. He gives some really good definitions of those three words. And I'm just going to say the definitions without going into too much detail. But parallelism is the idea of choosing to do multiple things at once. Asynchrony is reacting to things that will happen. And concurrency is competition to access and mutate some shared resource. So Raku has great support for those, and being a multi-paradigm language, it doesn't impose any particular strategy on you for dealing with concurrency. So we've had some conversations earlier today about Elixir, which has the actor model. There's a Go track where you have a lot of threads running at the same time. Many languages have different models of concurrency, and Raku tries not to be too dogmatic and lets you do whatever you want. So you have, but you have to deal with race conditions yourself. So if you want to get started writing some Raku and experimenting with concurrency, instead of like say hello and say world, you can just put the word start in front of say hello. Now what that does is it schedules the execution of that statement on another thread. So congratulations, you've just made a race condition. The output from this program is not deterministic. You might get hello world. You might get world hello if world runs before the second thread runs. Or you might just get world if the second thread doesn't have a chance to start before the program exits. So you can experiment and find out for yourself why other languages impose these models. And it's to manage things like this. So the simplest thing is you say, OK, I want to avoid this race condition. And the easiest thing to do is you can just add the word await. We heard earlier about async await. There's no async. There's just await. Await will wait until it finishes. Wait until the promise finishes before going on to the next statement. There are a number of high-level. So the documentation of concurrency in Raku breaks it down as follows. You have these high-level APIs. You have low-level APIs. And then there are also some other sort of built-in event sources that are not mentioned on the concurrency page. But the high-level APIs, you basically have promises, which are what we just saw, where you're scheduling some execution, and it's going to finish at some point in the future. You have channels, which are basically one-to-one message queues between different threads of execution. You have supplies, which are one-to-many message queues. And then you also have this nice thing called proc async, which is a great way to deal with external processes. We're going to see a little bit more of that today, since this talk is mostly about scripting, where you're managing external processes. There are also low-level APIs. If you want to deal with threads, you can. If you want to deal with locks, then congratulations. You have access to the kernel's implementation of mutexes, which may be hardware implementations even. We also have atomic types and atomic operators. So again, these are sometimes implemented even at the hardware level. And then you can even use the scheduler if you want to change the concurrency paradigm that you're using by writing another scheduler that implements the strategy for scheduling, for queuing different threads. Okay, so I'm going to go through some of the different built-in event sources and do some very practical examples. Some things you might see in your scripts, file system changes. All these things are built into the core TCP or UDC sockets. Of course, time changing provides a great event stream. And IO pipe lets you watch different Unix pipes and respond based on incoming data. I'll also talk a little bit about parallel execution with race and hyper and phasers. OK, so let's do a quick trip from Bash to Raku. Okay, easiest way to go, take your bash script, in front of every line, put the word shell, and congratulations, you have now ported your bash script to Raku. So shell is built in, and even better than that, there's an entire language for quoting, so you don't have to deal with all of the horribleness of trying to escape your quotes when you're having subcommands, and they all have quotes for all of their different arguments. Probably the most interesting one is the one at the top, the two angle brackets. This is sort of like a lot of languages have a way of taking words separated by white space and turning them into an array. That's what this does, except if you have something in quotes, that becomes its own element. So putting echo starting database dump in quotes makes an array with two elements. The first one is echo, and the second one is starting database dump. And those get passed then as an array to the shell command. So there's some extra fancy stuff going on there behind the scenes. So here's a little script that starts your database dump. one of the goals of Raku is that easy things should be easy and hard things should be possible, as Larry has said. So of course, you don't have to say shell echo. You can use the word say to print things to the screen. say starting database dump, we run your shell command. So now here we have our first little glimpse of asynchrony with this thing where I'm saying say now minus init now. Now what this does is pretty clever. What's happening here is init is a phaser, and this runs during the initialization phase of your Raku program. Anybody use Go here? You Go programmers? A couple? Okay, so Go has something similar. Go has something called deferred execution. And you might use it in a Go program to say, hey, when you're exiting this subroutine, don't forget to execute this database transaction, something like that. So there are a lot of phasers, and so basically you can use those to schedule code. Okay, so I don't know about you, but one of the most annoying things is having a script that starts doing something, and then you sort of sit there like waiting and watching, and nothing is happening on the screen. So I like to have at least a clock saying how much time has passed. For something like a database dump, if you do it a lot, then you'll know, and then you could even turn it into a progress bar, and then you'll be able to estimate how much time something's going to take. So we can do this quick. We can do this easily with a supply. So we make a supply. We call supply.interval1. This makes a clock that gives us a new value every 1 second. And then we make a tap on the supply by saying my $timer equals clock.tap. And then the code there .say execute is saying what the argument is to the tap. So basically, it'll say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then that's running on a separate thread. So while PG dump is running, you're seeing time go by. So that's really nice. And then there's some other nice built-ins to make it even a little bit prettier. Since we want to have a script that doesn't have a lot of external dependencies, you can use the very clever polymod, one of my favorite methods, which basically does a sequence of mod and div operations and turns your seconds into minutes and seconds. And then you can format it, and then you have sort of a nice little clock. And then you might say, hey, that's so great. I want to do this on all my shell commands. I always want to see a little clock. Well, guess what? You can use, so in Python, they're called decorators. And in Raku, it's the wrap command. Basically, we can say shell.wrap. And then basically, this will call our timer before we call same to do the original shell command. And then it'll close it, and then it'll say done. So now you've got your nice script that you just copied and pasted and added shell to the beginning of them, and now all of your commands have a little clock saying how long they're going to take. So let's talk quickly about timeouts. This is the timeout command in Bash. You can give it an argument that's the number of seconds, timeout one, and then in this example, we're doing a DNS call. We're looking up example.com. So we say timeout one, host example.com, and if it fails, then the exit code is non-zero. And then, so otherwise we say DNS seems okay. So the way we do that in Raku is with a promise, actually a couple of promises, one that expires after a second, and then another one that does whatever you're doing. And then you make a third promise, which resolves when either one of those two finishes first. So we could say promise, we await promise that any of, and then start shell host command, and then start sleep one. Okay, so we do those two things in separate threads. Whichever one finishes first, we'll know if we timed out. It doesn't quite work, though, because shell is going to fork something off, and when you fork something, even if your Raku program exits, it's going to keep going. So there is a better way to do that, and that is to use proc async instead of shell, so that you don't have this sort of tree of processes, right? So we say timeout equals promise.in1. My dollar proc is a proc async new host example.com. And then you await either any of proc.start, which finishes when the process finishes, or dollar timeout. And then you can call proc.kill if timeout is true. Okay. So I'm going to do a few more examples here to show you how to build up, how we use some of these other primitives to help you think about problem solving concurrently. So supply.tap, another way of saying that, these are exactly the same. Instead of saying supply.tap, you can say start, react, whenever, supply, which is a lot of words. We already saw start, starts in a new thread. React makes another, like a reactor or an event loop. And then whenever it says, hey, let's make a tap on this supply. Okay, so let's watch a directory for changes. Whenever anything changes in there, we're going to turn our markdown file into HTML. $CWD is the current path. You can call watch, and then you can grep for certain files, and then call MD to HTML whenever one of them changes. I have a few more examples quickly. The slides will be available for you to look at more slowly if I run out of time. So let's look at ping, okay? Ping is great. One of the things that sadly is missing from ping is that it prints all these nice statistics at the end, but it doesn't print the median. What if you want the median ping time? You only have the min, max, and the average. Well, let's compute it by watching the output of ping and then keeping track of the output and then printing it at the end. And so here you can see what's really nice about the React whenever construct is that you can have a whole bunch of whenevers inside your React. Okay, so we have a little leave phaser, which is going to kill the process when we exit. We have our process, which is going to do the ping. And then whenever there's a timeout, we're done. Whenever we get a line, we parse it, and then we add it to this lines array. Whenever we get a signal, so signal makes a stream that when signals are sent to the process, you can also finish. And then we can compute the median at the end. So can we make it even fancier and ping multiple hosts at the same time with our program? So let's see if we can make something that looks kind of like this, multi-ping, where multi-ping gets a list of hosts, and then it makes this little bar graph by watching the output of ping. And then you can sort of see like which one of these hosts is responding more quickly at the same time. This is a really short program to write. And basically what you do is you start a loop using a channel. And so this runs in a separate process. Whenever the channel.receive is going to block, whenever it receives something, you take that something and you print it out to the screen. and then you basically start your processes. There are a few sort of nice things here, nice features of Raku that make this even a little bit easier. So this little percent is a way of constructing a hash. And what's kind of cool is that constructing a hash looks exactly the same way as destructuring. If you've programmed in JavaScript, you know they have this really nice argument destructuring syntax. And it's equivalent to the construction syntax. So you can basically make these channels that communicate between threads, and you can send structured data in between them. And you can also have type checking and things like that. And so it's really nice. And that's your output. Similarly, if we wanted to dump a whole bunch of MySQL or Postgres databases at the same time, if we don't care about the output, it's even easier. And the way we can do that is by using a statement prefix called race, which basically says take this loop and run the body of the loop concurrently. And you can give a parameter, the batch, the number to run concurrently, and the degree of concurrency. And then in a few lines of code, we've made PG multi-dump, which can dump several databases at once. Okay, so in conclusion, we've seen some examples of tracking progress of a command, timing out a command, using asynchronous techniques to respond to file system events, using asynchronous techniques to respond to lines emitted from a command, instant parallelism, we saw some locks, and for further reading, there's stuff on the ecosystem, and also the Raku documentation about concurrency is excellent. So that's it. Thank you. I think we may be out of time. I don't know if we have time for a question. One question. Or multiple questions at the same time.
Yeah. I'll take your one question. You gave an example there of watching a file system event and kicking off a process based on that.
Yes.
I don't have the word I need here, but is there a sort of a paradigm or capability for testing whether something has finished being written to before you start off your sub-process? So if the markdown file is really big, then the file appearing might not have been finished written yet, and you kicked off something to convert it to HTML before it's done so.
So that it does get, I think I know where you're going with this, especially because, like, if you're using an editor, then it's not that there's a single event where, like, the file changes. And you have to, it'll often be, the editor will be doing, like, a write and rename, or it'll start writing. And so you want to be careful about that. So there are some things to do that. You can throttle your supplies is one thing. If you're spawning a process, you can say proc.ready, and that will tell you when it's ready, so that before you start sending things to it. Basically it's hooking into the notification API that's for the file system. So any events from the file system, there's going to be a file changed, file rename, and then you, so you're, the limit is only whatever the file system provides. Yeah. Yep, sure. All right. Thank you.